Welcome to the Flood Resilience Committee of Mount Pleasant Town Council for Monday, March the 4th. Appreciate everybody coming here today. Item two is approval of the minutes from February 5th.
I move for approval, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 All right, motion carries and minutes are approved. Item three is public comments. If you have a public comment, please come forward, give name and address, please.
Good morning, Daniel Brownstein, 1391 Downsbury Drive. I wanted to thank the mayor for putting this on the agenda. We had discussed it shortly after I was elected in November to follow suit with what the city of Charleston has done with its environmentally acceptable packaging rule. These are changes that I believe would bring retailers in compliance with the spirit of our ordinance here. And specifically what we're talking about are what the major retailers like the Walmarts and the Targets have done to get around our ordinance, and that's using a thicker plastic bag that's not really recyclable or reusable. So I appreciate you guys taking up this issue and look forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Councilman. Any others? Public comment? All right, there being none, public comment is closed. Item four, employee years of service recognition.
Good morning. I'm actually going to take this one. Every now and then we get somebody from executive offices and they don't quite fit with some of the other committees. But I specifically asked that this individual be included on a committee that you chaired, Mayor.
Oh.
Today we... Come on.
Come on, Jeffrey.
Today we are recognizing Jeffrey Jelks for 5 years of service.
Wow. It only seems like 15. Jeffrey and I have this ongoing repartee. So
that's why he's being recognized here. Anyone who has had the opportunity to work with or even speak with Jeffrey knows what an asset he is to the town. I wanted to offer just a few comments this morning. First of all, out of all of my years of conducting interviews, this is still hands down the most entertaining interview I ever conducted. So I'm not sure we really talked about the job, but I knew we had to hire him. On a daily basis, Jeffrey helps with a number of things, supporting me directly with my calendar and other business, assisting with purchasing, setting up meetings like for today. He serves on the ERC, but I wanted to recognize Jeffrey for two things in particular. First, Jeffrey's in charge of Alhambra Hall bookings. So this means within the past 5 years, he has dealt with hundreds of brides and weddings. This would include during COVID restrictions, when a hurricane or two swept through, when we had maintenance issues, and not once have I ever heard a complaint, because he handles all of these situations with such grace and is excellent with even the most challenging brides. And for those of you who participated with All America City, which is a couple of you up there, you know firsthand that we could have not made this trip without his help. Imagine handling flights and hotels and t-shirt sizes and all the rest for the entire delegation. Plus, once we got into Denver, I think he made friends with every other city that was there.
Yes.
This is a little bit bittersweet because Jeffrey just got a new position. He's not leaving us. He's not even leaving executive offices. He's just not going to be my assistant anymore. But he's moving over to HR, where he's going to be helping with recruiting, which is a good thing for him because he just has a way with people. So thank you, Jeffrey, for your work, and especially the energy and the smiles that you bring every day.
Here, here.
Oh, wait. Let me slack in my stomach. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeffrey, we appreciate it very much. You're the life of the party.
room.
I know, now everybody's gone. For those of you stuck with us, this puts us at item 5 on our agenda, review of Community Forest Master Plan, final recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and Flood Resilience Committee for taking the time to hear this out this morning. For you guys that don't know, my name is Chris Lubert. I'm in the planning department. I'm a certified arborist, also a couple other certifications. And so what you see before you is going to be our community forest master plan that was developed by consultant Dudek. And so they broke it up into 4 spaces. First, we're going to talk about plan development, how this came to be. Second, they're going to look at key findings, seeing what our canopy coverage looks like, what we're currently doing, items like that. Third's going to be what's in the master plan. And again, I want to emphasize this is a 280-page master plan. This presentation is not going to come close to covering all the topics, but we're going to try and highlight some of the good ones that we're very proud of. And then also it's going to talk implementation. So what are we going to do next after this plan? And how do we get some action items to start growing our community forest? So first, plan development. So firstly, what is a community forest master plan? It's essentially we're building the roadmap, the foundation to a healthy, thriving, proactively managed community forest. And nextly, like anything, it costs money to develop this community master plan. That money was granted from the South Carolina Forestry Commission, which was granted from the United States Forest Service. And then in turn, that's in 2022, we selected Dudek to help us develop this. So through each chapter, they do a good job of breaking it down. Essentially, okay, establish a baseline. Here's what we currently do. This is how we manage it. Second step, what are the arboricultural standards to that? And then thirdly, how can we bring it up to snuff, so to say, and bring it up to the standards? So key findings. So with our Town of Mount Pleasant canopy coverage is going to be approximately 27% coverage. And to break that down even more, there's about 37,000 acres of land within the Town of Mount Pleasant. So you're looking at about 10,000 acres are currently covered by canopy trees. It also provides numerous stormwater, decreases flooding, has environmental benefits, economic benefits, you name it, the trees got it. So also, the last part that's important as well, we only have so much public land that we can plant on. So if we truly want to grow this, we're going to need some community engagement. We're going to need some help. So next, how we currently manage this. So the funding for our community forest is often reactive, say like a tree falls into the road or a limb is hanging, it's dangerous, it's going to be reactive. And we take money from other emergency contingency funding. We have recently created an urban forester, Mr. Eddie Bernard, who cannot be with us today. He is helping develop this tree management program, implement it, and also advocating for it. We have a tree protection ordinance. We have a tree removal ordinance. We have a tree mitigation ordinance. All these are currently in place. And what we do not have is a proactive management plan to help control invasive plant and pest populations. And this one they felt was important because there is a unique situation in Hollywood, South Carolina with the Asian longhorn beetle. Hollywood is currently experiencing a quarantine zone. So essentially they can't take any tree trimmings, tree removals. They cannot take it outside of Hollywood because they have this invasive beetle there and it's only there for now. Also, we have popcorn trees, which you've probably seen all around town. So next, community engagement. Currently, we do not work with any partners or volunteer groups to provide tree planting or tree care activities on public property. Annually, we have about 10 volunteers, totaling around 80 hours of volunteer effort, specifically towards the Take Root Mount Pleasant program, which is the tree giveaway, which we do have on March 16th, 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Park Rest Rec Center. Next, we have the Tree Bank Grant Program, which essentially is a reimbursement program to HOAs, and it helps them plant public areas like HOA common areas they would plant, and we would help reimburse them about $2,000 typically. And then we've also gotten expressed from community members, they've expressed to us about losing canopy coverage due to development demands. So third, the content of this master plan. So five priorities were identified by us that we wanted to see in this master plan that we thought we could do better, and they're going to help us achieve that. First one, increase operational efficiencies. This is going to be internal, how we handle trees, how can we build more efficient, how can we not waste our time. Reduce cost of tree care. We contract out a lot of our tree care right now. How can we reduce that cost? Is there things we could be doing in-house? So looking at that. Identify and mitigate tree risk. This is going to be inventorying trees in the public right-of-way and being more proactive to pruning that limb that's hanging or any danger trees to get them removed. Preserve canopy through periods of new development. This is going to go in line with that code rewrite currently undergoing right now. And then foster community involvement and advocacy around trees, which is going to lead us right into this next slide. So to help us with that community engagement, they've actually developed a best practice for community engagement within there. And this basically shows us the challenges we're having, and then it goes through each and provides action items so that we can have better community engagement, basically. It's like putting signs on trees or something to educate them about why this is important, why we should care about trees. They're not just there, they provide a lot of benefit. And then so in addition, there's a couple other things listed that we don't have time to dive into, but we'll briefly mention them. It is going to have an inventory collection and analysis of those benefits we keep mentioning. It's going to go over our current management program, funding capabilities. It goes into the community engagement again, as that's a very important one. And then these last three bullet points, strategic plan, implementation plan, and monitoring plan, you're going to see in this next section as we talk about how to implement this. And lastly, but not least, you have the storm and disaster plan. And so what this does is allows us to be eligible for federal FEMA money after a storm event. They would help us specifically with tree removal and tree debris cleanup. And so this provides an opportunity for that. So how are we going to implement this? So what they've done is that each chapter is going to have this strategic plan outline goals and strategies. This is an example. I'm not going to read through that, but it's essentially what we have talked about, all those problems we have. How are we going to achieve it? And so we'll achieve it by short, medium, long-term action items. It's going to say who is the responsible party, what are the costs associated with this action item, and then what are the prioritization. So by completing these, essentially we'll be taking steps to our goals and making sure that's met. There are going to be benchmarks along the way that we can see that, okay, we're meeting our goals, we're tracking as we should. And then just like you have a comprehensive plan, you need to revisit this plan and update it and make sure you're achieving your goals and see if any of those goals are changing. And then, so immediate actions that they recommended we take now. So identifying funding resources, we are currently in the process of receiving another grant to help us inventory the remainder of the public trees. They only captured about 1% in this, so we have a lot more work to do on that. Foster advocacy, we are working on that. Mr. Eddie Bernard is working to develop education material and then trying to reach out and partner with whoever we can. Preserving the canopy, as I mentioned, the code rewrite, we are modifying our tree preservation ordinance. And then also we are developing requirements and mitigation trees for new development. And that is just the brief summary of that community forest master plan. If you guys have any questions or recommendations, let me know.
Chris, that was excellent. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that. Yes, sir, Mr. Chapman.
Two issues. Number one, Chris did a great job with us at the meeting we had last Friday with the planning committee special meeting. And thank you for your expertise.
Yes, sir.
The second is, in today's paper, there was an article about HOAs challenging people who might be planting in their yard. And I don't know that there are any state laws about their ability to challenge, but we need to take that into consideration and maybe make sure that we're working within the law, but also letting our HOAs know that we're going to be out there advocating for improved tree canopy within the town, and to make sure we don't get them objecting, if you will, to what we're trying to do for the entire town. Thank you.
I agree. On that note, this is a little bit ancillary, but it's on that same topic that Councilman Rambo and I sit on the Waterworks Commission, and just from the roughly 7,000 irrigation meters that we have, you know, you can get an irrigation meter so that you're only paying for the water, you're not paying the wastewater side of that because it goes in the ground. And this doesn't count all the others, like me, whenever I use, you know, my tap water, my hose, but just from those 7,000 irrigation meters in months like July, August, and September, 50 million gallons a month of the purest drinking water, you know, from 2,500 feet below the surface of the earth. The best drinking water is not surface water. And that's watering lawns. And if we had trees, if we had pollinator gardens and those type things, we could easily cut that in half because that is a limited resource. And, you know, as time goes on, the use of that is going to have to change. But the long green, all green, and well, I started to mention the name of one business. I don't want to pick on one business that does lawn care, but you know what I'm talking about. In areas like ours where water is going to be getting scarcer, at least as we know it, we need to rethink lawns. Doesn't mean they have to go wild or be crazy or anything, but there's new and different ways to do it. And, of course, the tree canopy is the best. I totally agree with that. My question from y'all's meeting, and well, I'm sitting here with three members of the planning committee, what is the nexus of this, you know, our community forest plan and the zoning? Where do we stand on getting those two to match up? In other words, we're looking at this today, and I'm trying to, yeah, this is possible. Nope, sorry. This is review of community forest plan, final recommendations. So are we getting ahead of the zoning process? Are we right with it? Do we need to take action on this today?
No, there really doesn't need to be any action. This this plan was completed. It was given to the Green Commission. They supported it and wanted to send it to you all. I don't know that it needs to go to town council necessarily. Really just wanted to bring it before you and let you know. And as Chris presented on Friday when he talked about the tree ordinance, we are using a lot of the recommendations from this plan to inform some of the code updates. One of them, help me, Chris, one of them would be increasing the tree protection zone. What's another one? I'm trying to think of a few. But there are several of the things that we've looked at. Some of these things are just, you know, long-term. We've got to get more funding. We've got to do more, look at the canopy. But there are small changes we can make with the code update, including increasing the tree protection zone. We're looking at ways, the 2.5 inches, mm-hmm. going from a 4-inch tree mm-hmm. required to a 2.5-inch tree. When somebody wants to mitigate, they can't find a 4-inch tree. And now the studies show and the research shows that actually a 2.5-inch tree is more viable than a 4-inch tree. So these are some things that we're already proposing to incorporate that the planning committee heard Friday. Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to think of some other things I missed. There was a lot of information that he went over on Friday, but I feel like we're doing a good job of capturing those short-term things that we can at this point.
Trying to save more types of trees, I guess. Yes. Having mm-hmm. a broader mm-hmm. list of what we would protect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I do like the idea of this smaller tree. I don't know about enforcement. I think in the past, people just paid into the, you know, to mitigate the trees, and they weren't really replanting. So I'm not really sure where enforcement falls, but I'd like to see more trees planted where they were taken out, you know, with development or if somebody loses a tree due to disease or storm or something, or town projects. I just don't know how we really enforce having them actually plant replant or with development. I know that too. They just pay into tree bank or they mitigate and they don't really replant anything.
Well, they right now they pay into the tree bank more so because they can't find a 4-inch tree. With the code update, and Chris talked about this Friday, we're actually gonna have to justify if they say I can't plant a 2.5-inch tree on my property, they're gonna have to show us why they can't, where they can't. And if they can, they have to plant at least one. They have to plant at least one. And if they can accommodate more, they're gonna have to plant more. And then if we've exhausted all other options and they can't plant anymore, then they'll pay into the tree bank. But we really feel like lowering this amount. You can't just go out and buy a 4-inch tree and you got to hire somebody to come dig the hole and do all these things. So we really feel like we're going to get more plantings than over mitigation by lowering this amount and also adding this requirement that they have to prove that they cannot plant on their property.
And one other question. We haven't really spoken about like fines and penalties. I mean, is that something that needs to be redefined? I mean, as far as the dollar amount, if it's more punitive, maybe they won't.
So there's two ways to do this. We have two things we do. The first is somebody cuts down a tree illegally. That is a ticket, and that is they have to pay 200% mitigation. And with that ticket, they go to court. So this is one area we have. The other area we have is somebody comes in and they apply to get a tree removed and we approve it and then they don't pay the mitigation later. And we took a group, we took probably 13, 15 tickets of mitigation. So they were approved to remove a tree, but then they decided they didn't want to pay their mitigation. We wrote tickets, it went to court and it was all dismissed because it has to do with proving intent. So we're struggling with this. There's a maximum on the criminal, and then we could look at civil penalties, and David can speak more to this, and I know he's mentioned it before, but there's a maximum on the criminal, and I think it's 500. You can't do anything beyond that. Civil, we can look at that, but we really have an issue with collecting that mitigation later because they did get a proper permit to remove the tree. So one of the things that we're actually proposing, and we don't know how this is going to work, it could have unintended consequences, but in the code rewrite, we're looking at if we, before we even approve the removal of a tree, we tell them how much it's going to cost, and they're going to have to give us a deposit of that mitigation. Now, that could do one of two things. That could upfront get us some money. Maybe we don't get the remainder, but we get 25%. Or we could have folks say, you know what, never mind, I'm not going to do it, and then go do it illegally. So we struggle with how to do this and how to make the best use of staff's time, going out, seeing if it's been cut down illegally, going out multiple times, sending letters, emails. Jane spends copious amounts of time chasing down mitigation money. And she's done an excellent job, but it's just, it's a really tough one. It's a tough nut to crack, and it's frustrating. We have made one improvement already. People say, well, we didn't know we had to mitigate, so now we make them sign an affidavit saying, I understand that if I have to remove this tree, I may have to mitigate. So we have this affidavit now, but we're also looking at getting that deposit. If you've got suggestions, we'd love to hear them, because it's tough.
Yes.
I had somebody mention to me, what about like notice, the way we do zoning, or, you know, so that the neighbors know and they can keep an eye out and pay attention to, you know, so that the community knows if something substantial is being removed rather than it just going down and then, you know, big opening in the sky and the neighbors are all upset after the fact. I don't know if that would help people own up to their responsibilities, if everybody's like a yellow sign's going in the yard, there's something significant being taken.
That's a huge staffing going out, making the signs go for every, let's see, in 2023, we had almost 700 tree applications. We've got two guys. So, and you figure they go out at least twice to the site. So I can tell you with big tree removal or big things that really have an impact, they're either going to go to BOZA, so there is already going to be a yellow sign, and BOZA just approved
three
removals. Yeah. So if they go to BOZA, typically if they're historic, they have to go to BOZA. There is a yellow sign. Or if it's a commercial project, it's already on a DRB agenda. Or if it's a residential project, it's already on a planning commission agenda. So those big impactful clearings that we hear about, those are already typically noticed through an agenda, or they're on an agenda, some sort of agenda. Most of the staff level approvals are willow oaks, laurel oaks that have defects. Mm-hmm.
Water oaks.
So they're things that are considered hazardous. They come with an arborist report that says you can't save this tree, it needs to come down. And those are the types of things that typically staff approves removal of. I think my one last question is, our canopy is at 27%. Is there a goal? Do we have a goal? Or we just want it to be as much as...
I don't think there is a number goal. Do you remember the goal?
City of Charleston is like 30-something percent. I think that 27 is pretty good. Yeah. When you looked at other municipalities, it's a pretty good percentage. But I don't know that we have a goal. I think we definitely want to maintain and grow, but I don't know that the plan on the goal.
Have we ever considered having a like an infrared study done so we can get a breakdown of evergreens, deciduous, hardwoods, all of that? I don't think they're real expensive to get.
Liz might have more info on that.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Still morning?
Yes. Okay, for a few more minutes anyway. I'm Liz Boyles with the Planning Department. We did an analysis back kind of during COVID time when it all shook out.
We were being creative.
Yeah, well, you know, something that could be done from remotely was kind of good. But there was a breakdown within that. I don't have the numbers with me, but it was based upon, you know, images, not an infrared, anything like that. Okay. But we could certainly do
just
some more
visual,
of that.
Just looking, yeah.
Yes, sir. There is, and we could get those numbers for you if you like. But it, that's the sort of thing that we could continue to, you know, to use in the future to implement this. And one of the big, I believe Chris mentioned, one of the angles that was important within this plan was that, you know, looking at the diversity of tree types and ages. You don't want only old oak trees in the town, because at some point, even a beautiful old oak tree is going to have its last day. Right. So you want a variety of species, and you want a variety of ages. So that's the sort of thing that we can continue to look into, you know, as we begin to implement this more and develop the plan for caring for our public trees.
Right, because that's kind of where I was going. A monoculture is not good. Even if it lasts 200 years, it's still a monoculture, and you don't want that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Anything else? Do y'all need an act? I don't think y'all need an action by the committee. No.
No.
Only if there were any, you know, glaring advice errors or anything that we need to do. Thank y'all. Very, very comprehensive, and I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
You're welcome. So that'll conclude item 5. This will move us to item 6, discussion and possible action regarding a proposed amendment to the town ordinance entitled Environmentally Accept. This is our plastic bag regulation, which, did we enact this in 2018? I think it was my first year as mayor, or 19, yeah. Okay. Right.
Specifically familiar with the
bags that
issue.
Right. Okay. And I wanted to add too that one of the ways, you know, when we did this, we were the first large municipality. The Isle of Palms had done it, and I think another beach community somewhere, we're the first large one to do it. But one thing we did to not get pushback from businesses was we worked with them. We actually went, I know like Publix was real big on this, and we met with them, and they brought us samples of their type of packaging and that type of stuff. So I'm not sure exactly where this will give us the will of council, but one way we got it passed without, you know, businesses large and small saying, well, we'll just pull out and leave Mount Pleasant and stuff, was we gave them time so that they had a chance to figure out their supply chain to comply with it, which is important. We didn't just do it and say you got 30 days. So let's keep that in mind as we go forward on this.
Yes, sir.
All right. So who's taking you?
Chris?
Yes, sir. Thank you again. So as you're all familiar with, the plastic bag ordinance, or otherly known as the environmentally acceptable packaging and products. So City of Charleston passed theirs this past December. And in January, we took it to Green Commission, and they recommended that we incorporate something similar into our code's language. We have also met with some stakeholders, not on that side that you referred to earlier, Mr. Mayor, but typically on the other side, like the Coastal Conservation League, South Carolina Aquarium, people on that side, and they're going to help us regarding education, outreach, and help with compliance. And so here it is. It's very basic. You are amending the definition of a reusable carry-out bag. And the big part being that number two there has a handle, is what it used to say. And so they added more terminology to make it more specific. So the handle has to be stitched, and it cannot be heat-fused. And what this is doing is it's closing a loophole where the bigger businesses, like the Walmarts, I don't think Publix was doing it, and they're just using a thicker bag. And so you're still getting the plastic bag. You're not meeting the intention of the ordinance. And so what this does is saying, okay, well, now you need a stitched handle. You know, it still has in there, it could be a thicker plastic bag, but that'd be very difficult to achieve with a stitched handle. Also, it amends and adds language saying, when you order food, they have to ask you, or they don't have to, but you have to either ask for the disposable to-go cutlery, or they'll ask you and you have to say yes in response. And so if you don't say anything, they won't give you the disposable to-go cutlery. And that is essentially the two main changes, but the bigger one being the first one with the stitch handle. And that's all we have for that one.
All right, committee members, your thoughts?
I have a question.
All right.
How is the stitched handle more reusable.
So have you seen the cloth bags? Like you go to Publix, they have the green bags.
Right.
And so that handle is what I envision. It's typically stitched. And so those type of bags is what it's promoting. It's still, you don't have to only use those bags. You can still use the paper bags. That's my knowledge, but that's the gist of it.
Okay, thank you.
Is that wording on the stitched, is that straight from Charleston? Is that the way they use it as well?
Yes, sir.
Because that was my question. What about a paper bag, which now they have handles?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't when we were growing up. We had to hold one in each arm. But anyway, we won't have that cultural conversation.
Yeah.
but that does not, I'm not sure where, this just says carry-out bags specifically designed and manufactured for multiple reuse and meets the following criteria. Okay. I just want to make sure it was clear. So this is the recyclable plastic with a minimum thickness of 4 mils.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me what ours says now. Is ours like 2.5?
Ours says
225.
It still says 4.
Is what?
It still says 4.
Still says 4. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Now, when this says recyclable plastic, we were saying before that the ones they're using now can't be recycled. They're just reusable.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a plastic bag made that's recyclable that can go with in our recycling bin rather than having to be taken back to the grocery store?
I don't think so.
There's not one in existence.
No, ma'am. The Charleston County, their recycling program does not accept those plastic bags, any plastic bags, because they gum up the machines that they use. So that's why you have to carry them back to the grocery store, and they do their magic with them. But the heavier Walmart bags, for lack of a better term, my understanding is those are recyclable under those conditions. You just can't put them in your bin. So
so they're not recyclable with our current county system.
Correct.
But in general, they are, is what you're saying.
Technically, yes, sir.
Got it. just by a different means.
Yes, sir.
Not the blue bin means.
Not the blue bin. Don't put them in the blue bin. They have a very set list of things that are supposed to go in that blue bin.
Right.
So no one's gone as far as to say no plastic bags at all, I guess. No municipality in the area.
Well, I think
has no plastic at all.
Part of, I don't believe so, no ma'am, because a lot of the, even the bags that are hand-stitched, some of those have, I think,
plastic
you know, coating or components or whatever.
Right,
you don't want to discourage the use of those.
Mm-hmm. I remember, and this is that many years ago that we just heard, part of the science of that was what they were finding in seafood and in aquatic environments, and it more was the smaller mills instead of the larger ones. And so it wasn't that all plastic bags are that damaging, although plastic bags are not great on storm drains, are they? Or within them, we all know that. But so far as what was breaking down and getting into our maritime ecosystem, it was the single use ones. So, all right, thank you, Liz. All right, do we have a motion?
Can I ask one more question?
Absolutely.
The second one, can you go to the next slide?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know how that's remotely enforceable. So the customer has to ask for a to-go cutlery. Mm-hmm. Most people just assume the to-go cutlery is going to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
And if I may weigh in, one thing that has changed a lot, even in these 5 years, and we have COVID to thank for a lot of that, a lot more people are using Uber Eats and stuff to take it home as opposed to a park or somewhere like that. So I can see where, you know, if I'm getting it delivered at home, that plastic cutlery or whatever form it is, I'm not going to use it because I'm using my own knife and fork. So I know that puts a burden on the restaurant to say, do you want us to put cutlery in there? I get that. Other questions?
Yes, I have one. If Walmart, as an example,
mm-hmm.
still chooses, for whatever reason, to use their current bags, and I mean, I use it and throw it in the trash can, which is allowable, and I presume will still be allowable under this ordinance. Is there any reason that we should do something about that?
Sorry, so if I understand, so if we continue using those bags,
right,
they wouldn't be allowed per this ordinance anymore.
So they couldn't even have them in their store.
Right. I mean, they could have them in the store, but they can't give them to their customers. They're not going to be able to bag their stuff in that.
It's my understanding this essentially eliminates the ability to use those gray Walmart plastic bags
mm-hmm.
because they don't have the hand stitch.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we would need, now this came from the Green Commission with a recommendation of support. I think what we would need from you all, if you did want to move it forward, is what is the timeline? Because like you said, how long are we going to allow the businesses to go through what they already have in stock and then come into compliance? So these are some things that we would need y'all to provide guidance on if you do support these. But it would essentially eliminate the ability to get rid of that Walmart bag that you see as it is now that they give out.
Or the Target bag.
Target.
The Target too. CVS.
Or
I went to CVS the other day. They're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Really bargains.
One of the things, the scale of this, the number we were given 5 years ago when we first passed it was 1 million single-use plastic bags a month dispensed in the town of Mount Pleasant. So we have gotten rid of 12 million single-use plastic bags a year in the town of Mount Pleasant, which I think we should be proud of. This is the next step. I would say if we do this, and you know, the Green Commission looks at their specialty and our specialty is to try to govern well. If we do this, let's give it 90 or 120 days for them to, you know, rethink supply. educate their customers. We couldn't do this, I don't even think 60 days, but I think 90 to 120 days.
Even like the first of the year, maybe.
We just had the first of the year.
Well, sorry, March. Well, I'll just say, I mean, by second reading would be April. I mean, 120 days.
Days from just about 120 days from second reading.
I'd go for that.
One thing I did want to mention too, and Christiane might be able to speak more to it, but a lot of this does come down to education. And I know that in the past, our communications office has done a great job, and it's probably gonna mean a lot of information blasts and working with our business community. But that'll be a huge component of it, and I know that that will take time. So I think the 120 days is a good start.
Okay.
We're currently out there on it's an enforcement issue,
right? Right.
Between business development office and communications, we're already working to try to increase the amount of communication so that our police officers don't have to actually go
right
through this. So the ability to have that education, but not only that, let's at least allow them to run through their current inventory on 120 days.
Okay. Motion?
Sure. I was just going to add, they, having worked in this industry, they don't stockpile 6 months worth of bags, and being chains, they can distribute them to other stores because not every municipality is doing what we're doing. So
okay,
they'll need a heads up, but they can get it done. I'm sure within 6 months, but okay.
We need a motion.
Okay. I'll move that we approve the new environmentally acceptable packaging ordinance to take effect 120 days from the second reading.
Sounds good. Do we have a motion? We have a second.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? All right. We'll call the question. All in.
Okay, sure. I would like to amend it to remove this one. I don't know if I could amend it. It's completely unenforceable. I mean, how do you even know somebody requests or doesn't request? I think, is it going to be enforced? No. So maybe it doesn't matter. But I think it's silly to have. But anyway.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion to amend it to remove. I think what we're what we're really trying to do is that first part, and I don't know why that part was thrown in there. So I'd like to remove that as a motion.
Is there a second? If not, the amendment fails for lack of a second. All right. So we're back to the original motion. Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say,
on the original.
Right. We'll have opportunity at second reading too to do.
Yeah, to make tweaks. Yeah.
So we can think about it.
Okay. Call the question. All in favor of the motion to amend the current environmentally acceptable packaging ordinance, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. We will make that, the motion carries. We will make that recommendation to full council. Item 7 is to adjourn. Thank you all for a great meeting, and